But today we have the privilege of interviewing one of the people that's involved in a documentary film about a man that's largely forgotten, that has been largely forgotten in history. The documentary film Crawford, A Man the South Forgot, talks about a man by the name of Anthony Crawford from South Carolina, and how he was largely done an injustice, and so was his family. And so, as mentioned, we have the privilege of interviewing the director, Carolyn DeVoe, who directed this documentary film. How are you today, Carolyn? Welcome to Everyday Black History.
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you. So to get started, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how did you get into filmmaking?
Okay. All right. So I'm a teacher. I have actually transitioned from media making, in a sense, to the classroom. I was a producer of commercials. I produced advertising commercials for Ogilvy and Mather for many years. And then I transitioned to nonfiction films and documentaries and worked for Global Vision in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And at Global Vision, I was working as a media director, helping to bring attention to one of their clients, who was Countess Albina Dubois-Rouvray, who operated a foundation, a nonprofit for children and families affected by HIV and AIDS, and who was raising awareness around the link between health and human rights around the world.
Okay.
So, yeah. And her nonprofit was called the Francois Xavier Bonnieux Foundation, or FXB.
Mm-hmm.
And the work that she did was really sort of groundbreaking, and she was connected with Harvard School of Public Health. And through that work, I actually was able to meet a lot of people on the ground in various countries, like in South Africa and Zambia,
mm-hmm.
who were really doing this, grassroots work, assisting children who had, largely become heads of household during the AIDS crisis.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. Wow. Okay, wow. Okay, well, interesting.
And we produced a documentary from that work about a young man in South Africa who became this advocate for children and women impacted by the virus.
Okay, all right. So now, what drew you to this project? How did you get involved with this documentary film about Anthony Crawford?
Okay, well, kind of an interesting story. I was married to the executive producer at the time, Howard Bowler.
Mm-hmm.
And Howard found a story in our local newspaper in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, just come off of finishing up the documentary about Nkosi Johnson in South Africa. And so we started developing the story. I was struck by the story personally because it's a story of the sort of the attempted decimation of a family.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
largely, while a lot was destroyed, if you watch the film, you can see how those fabrics sort of, reconnect
mm-hmm.
and the family members reconnect. But my family didn't suffer as great, violent a loss as Doria D. Johnson's and the Johnson family and the Crawfords. But my mother was separated from her family when she was a teenager because her father died at a heart attack, and she and her 10 siblings and her mother were asked to leave the property that they had been farming as sharecroppers.
Oh.
they really suffered. And so this story about the, you know, kind of the dissolution or this, you know, of the Black family.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's just all too pervasive, and it did, you know, it cut close to home for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I reached out to Doria and talked to her about the film idea, and had a long conversation with her, and I was really struck at her commitment to understanding the truth about what had happened to her ancestor. And I felt very comfortable entering into a relationship with her in terms, you know, in order to make the film going.
Right. Okay. So how was it visiting Abbeville, South Carolina, where Anthony Crawford is from? How was it?
Well, you know, in general, working on this project, we always felt, I certainly felt it. I know Doria did. We talked about it often, how Anthony Crawford's spirit was really sort of a guiding force, in a sense, as we were making the film. And we often thought about how brave he must have been to forge this life for himself against this backdrop of, you know, constant threats, racial prejudice and jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
So although, you know, we would often feel fearful traveling down to Abbeville to tell this story, because, I mean, no one was held accountable for his murder. And they wanted to keep it that way, you know?
Wow.
So ancestors of the lynchers still lived in Abbeville. They had become, you know, prominent members of the community and of, you know, the town and the state. So no one was interested in revisiting this horrific chapter in the history of the town. We did not always feel welcome going down to do the shooting. So it was sort of nerve-wracking from time to time. There are a couple of instances when where Doria and I, our arrival at a location was anticipated.
Oh.
You know, and I wasn't sure whether it was because, you know, someone I was going to interview had a conversation with someone else, or I would imagine that that's probably how people, you know, found out that we were coming down.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it still would just be a little bit jarring, you know, to hear, oh, yeah, we knew you were coming. So we always kind of felt, well, what else would be in store for us?
Right.
You know, at one time we did switch hotels. Because it just, you know, we were capturing B-roll in the town and, you know, driving down and clearly and videotaping shops that were still flying Confederate flags.
That's South Carolina. I mean, I have family from South Carolina as well. And going down there, growing up, we would go down there during the summers, and the Confederate flag was just a normal thing. It's just a normal thing. You know, stores have it, houses, you know, you pass by, it's just a normal thing. And,
right.
Yeah. So,
it's, what we are experiencing today with an attempted coup, an insurgency, in, you know, the seat of democracy for our country, you know, you can trace back to Reconstruction, and, you know, the Jim Crow South, to the fact that so many people, so many criminals, so many crimes went unanswered and untried. And this is a direct result of not holding people like the CANs, the all of the folks who were responsible for Anthony Crawford's lynching. And that's why it's so important today that everyone who was responsible and involved in the insurrection is held accountable. It will absolutely happen again.
Yes, it will.
Right.
It's interesting how you just mentioned how a lot of the people that was involved in Anthony Crawford's murder back then are prominent members in the citizen, prominent citizens in the town now. And I remember the part in the film where they went to like this museum, and one of the family members noted that there were a bunch of white faces that were considered prominent, but no black faces, and that they were there were black prominent black people in that town throughout its history that they didn't even bother to put their face up on in the museum. You know?
There's a constant effort to dehumanize African Americans in this country and discount our contributions to the any progress to building up the country. And it's just you know, unfortunate feature.
It really is.
That's baked in.
I mean, he was able to acquire 427 acres of land. That's incredible. You
but
know,
the thing
that,
is, go on. Sorry.
No. I was going to say that's mind-boggling to have accomplished that at that time when, you know, there were laws that you know, permitted black people from being successful, even voting. And yet he was still able to accomplish all that.
Right. Well, a lot of his land was, you know, acquired before the real sort of onslaught of Jim Crow laws. And it wasn't actually as unusual as people think that blacks were accumulating land. And becoming, you know, sort of middle class, working class landowners. That was actually more common than we understand. And it's also the reason why there was such a backlash from whites, because it's just unconscionable for many white people to have to regard African American people as equal.
Right.
And it's just I don't know why they think that or why harbor that. But obviously you need a workforce that's affordable. Yeah, but in any case, it was quite remarkable, and it also, I think, speaks to the fact that Crawford was particularly probably talented as a businessman. There were articles, you know, written about his crop yields. How, you know, he brought a bushel of beautiful melons into town. He wasn't only growing cotton. He clearly had a very varied, you know, assortment of crops. And he was very profitable.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
For his farm was very profitable. He was, yeah.
And he was a proud black man. You know, the part where he said that he would die before he let a man beat on him. You know, he had pride in himself, and he instilled that, you know, in his family. You know, and this watching the documentary, I had such a mix of emotions. You know, like I felt pride in the fact that he accomplished so much, and then sadness at what happened to him and his family, and then anger at what happened to him and his family. You know, the injustice that was done, and that no one was held accountable, and that it's been largely forgotten. You know, but it's such a great documentary. You know, that everyone should watch, because he should be a subject of Black history the same way as Harriet Tubman or George Washington Carver. You know,
absolutely. He was a really important figure in the community. You know, even besides his farming enterprise, he also was involved in building a school. He, you know, continued the work in the African Methodist Episcopal religion and in the church, Cypress Chapel, that his father was involved in founding. He was a Mason. He was a civically engaged man, community-minded, family-oriented, like a pillar of his community.
Absolutely. So how did you get in touch with his relatives, Doria and the rest of his descendants? How did you get in touch with them?
It was largely through Doria.
Okay.
She had gotten in touch with her cousin, Philip, who's in the film.
Yes.
And then she went down for a family reunion and met a lot of family members. She didn't know that they were having reunions in Abbeville.
Mm-hmm.
But she went down to one before I started filming. And then I went to one with her and met a lot of family members. And it was at the reunion in 2008, I believe, that I interviewed all of her great cousins and a couple of aunts.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Or were you going to say something else?
Oh, no, I wasn't.
Oh, okay. I thought I cut you off. Okay. So now how long did it take? How long were you involved? Because I saw that there was a passage of time, 2002, 2008, so how long were you involved? How long were you involved making this documentary?
Yeah, this was almost 2 decades.
Wow.
In the making. Yeah. We really started in 2002, and I was working as, still producing at that time with Global Vision, and then starting to produce this film. And then a lot of the material I paid for. I paid for, the trips down and the camera work. I hired a couple of camera people, which was a very good idea.
Mm-hmm.
You can't always do everything.
You're right. Uh-huh.
I learned quickly. So it was a long ride. And I was friends with Doria for, all of those years.
Mm-hmm.
And we applied for many grants. I wrote lots of grants. I was not successful in raising much money for the film through our traditional institutional mechanisms.
Right.
Got close with
Black Public Media at that time. It was shortlisted at one point, and then at the NEH was expressed some interest, but could not clinch the deal. So I eventually had to, I made a decision to actually finish a bachelor's degree and then a master's, and didn't work on the film for quite a while.
Okay.
And, you know, and then Howard decided to, you know, he looked at some of the film, and he had an audio post-production company, but he had started creating more film content. So he decided to give it a shot, and I was very happy that he hired Tiffany Jackman,
yes,
who just did a brilliant job editing.
I actually spoke to Tiffany right before I spoke to you.
It just like seamless weaving together of, you know, Doria's interview. In a way that just takes you through the important, you know, chapters.
Right, right.
That, you know.
Absolutely.
It's a really lovely job.
Yes, it was very seamless. You know, it all blended together so well, you know.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So now, how did working on the documentary affect you? I know, you know, being so closely involved, how did it affect you?
Well, I'll tell you, it made me realize how little I really knew about African American history when I started working on it. That the, you know, it's no surprise that so many, you know, African Americans as a group in this country, you know, that there is such a wide, such a big disparity in wealth.
Right.
You know, this is by design, you know.
Yes, yeah.
And we can see even now with so far almost $3 trillion has been distributed in stimulus because of COVID-19.
Yes.
You know, it makes you realize that there is no reason why this country cannot make amends with its, you know, descendants of enslaved Black people.
Right.
And so I really, you know, it pushed me to further my own education. I ended up getting a minor in Africana studies at Ramapo College and a degree in digital filmmaking. But and then I was always in awe of Doria's constant progress in her academic pursuits and her clear voice on the, you know, the egregious wrongs that had been done and the ways that we really need to be aware and able to address them.
Yeah, she was so steadfast in everything that she did, you know, like, so, and she's, you know, such an example, you know, of perseverance too, you know.
Absolutely. And she did it through love also. You always had the sense that this, you know, loving connection was being forged with her ancestor and then with the family members that she met along the way.
Right, right. Yes.
You know?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Very special woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's What's next for Carol DeVoe? Any other projects you have, going on?
You know, I teaching is so hard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what made me think that I could go from making films to teaching, but right now I teach. I'm an educational technology specialist at a public school.
Uh-huh.
So I teach classes in digital literacy and computer systems.
Mm.
And I have 239 students.
Wow.
So right now I'm always focused on designing interesting, rigorous lessons for my students. In terms of media production, I have to say that if I had all the money in the world,
mm-hmm.
I would make a film about fathers and daughters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I constantly have this idea for a film about how the relationship between fathers and their girl children
mm-hmm.
evolves, and yeah.
Okay. All right. That's a good idea. You know, maybe that's something in between classes you can flesh out a little more.
Oh, right. No, that's when I sleep. Maybe.
Hopefully, you know.
Yeah.
So where can the documentary Crawford, The Man That Self Forgot be found? Where can we watch it?
You can stream it on Quelly TV right now.
Okay.
And with hope it'll get picked up in other places, but I don't think that there are any plans to for any other venues right now.
Okay. Quelly TV it is. Yeah. So we will definitely be promoting it and talking about it, on Everyday Black History. And Carol, it's been a pleasure talking to you. It really has. And I appreciate you taking the time this afternoon. I know you, just got in, but I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us here and give us a little bit of background information on the documentary.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure talking to you too. Thanks. And thank you for doing the work that you do.
It's really
important.
Yeah.
And we have to continue carrying or picking up the mantle,
right,
telling our stories. It's very important.
Yes, indeed. And if you do happen to get that father and daughter's project, off the ground, you can always come here and talk about it and promote it.
Thank you. Maybe you'd like to, get a little funding.
I mean, hey, anything, just let us know.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you enjoy the rest of your afternoon and have a good night.
Thanks so much.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. So there we have it, folks. That was Carol DeVoe, the director of the documentary film Crawford, A Man That South Forgot. As we, mentioned before, when we spoke to Tiffany Jackson, who's the producer and editor, this is a very important story that, everyone should know about. Like the fact that, there were, this shows that even during the time of slavery and Jim Crow, there were still Black Americans who were successful. And Anthony Crawford was one of those. And it's the injustice that was done to him, the world should know about. So we encourage everybody to look for Crawford, A Man That South Forgot. It's on Quelly TV. It's a streaming service that caters to African-American content. So look for that, stream it, and let's, get some support for this documentary film. So that concludes this episode of Everyday Black History. So we will be coming at you soon with more Black history, and stay tuned for the next episode.